You know, some paintings, they just become like instantly recognizable, right? Like you see them everywhere and they represent this whole idea. And for me, that's Rembrandt's Philosopher in Meditation. Or, wait, should I even be calling it that? It's Philosopher in Contemplation now, isn't it? I guess even the Louvre can't seem to make up their minds.
You know, it's funny you should say that because that little title change actually kind of speaks volumes. It hints at this whole debate, this whole mystery that surrounds this artwork.
Okay, see, that's what always gets me hooked. Like, I feel like I've seen this painting a million times, but I'm starting to realize I've barely scratched the surface. So, for those of us who need to catch up, set the scene. What are we actually looking at here?
Okay, so imagine this. Dimly lit room, two figures. You've got this soaring vaulted ceiling, and then this massive spiral staircase. It just kind of draws your eye up.
Boy.
It's somber, it's still. You'd kind of expect to see, stacks of books, maybe some instruments.
All the typical philosopher
That's
stuff.
exactly like the typical trappings of, a philosopher hard at work.
Makes sense. But this one's almost like bare. It's like intentionally sparse.
And that's, I think, our first clue that maybe, just maybe, we've been misinterpreting this masterpiece for centuries.
Whoa.
And it gets even more interesting when you consider the signature and the date,
Okay.
1632.
Okay, intrigue already. I gotta ask though, what did you mean by misinterpreting?
So the way that this painting ended up in France is actually crucial. It ended up with a collector, the Marquis d'Argenson,
Okay.
back in the 1700s.
Right.
And he already owned another piece, very similar in style, showing a scholar.
Oh, I see where you're going with this. So, two paintings, same vibe, easy mistake.
Precisely. And so he displayed them as a pair, called them his philosophers. But, and here's the real kicker, that second painting, not even a Rembrandt.
What?
It's now attributed to Salomon Koenig,
Okay.
a contemporary of Rembrandt,
Okay.
but still.
Our guy got lumped in with an imposter.
Exactly. It's a case of mistaken identity.
I mean, but how does that even happen with like famous art?
It's actually more common than you think, especially back then. Art changed hands, it got engraved, reproduced, all without the documentation and the sort of paper trail we have now,
Right.
like a centuries-long game of telephone.
Right.
And the original message, the true subject, got totally muddled.
Wow. Okay. So in this case, philosophy just stuck. But what's crazy is there are records, I'm talking actual catalogs from 1738, calling this Tobit and Anna. So biblical figures, not deep thinkers after all.
Okay, now you've really got my attention.
See, and this is where our deep dive gets really interesting, because even if this is Tobit and Anna, it sure doesn't look like your typical biblical scene.
Okay, so we went from philosopher to like maybe a biblical scene, but
Yeah,
not a very obvious one.
right.
So who are Tobit and Anna?
So the Book of Tobit tells this really interesting story of Tobit, who's this devout man, loses his sight.
Okay.
And he sends his son, Tobias, on this journey.
Okay.
And Tobias is guided by the archangel Raphael, but Raphael's in disguise, right? It's
Interesting.
a whole story of faith and patience and divine intervention.
Okay, so not exactly angels and trumpets and, you know, all that typical imagery. But like, if this painting about them, where's the connection? What am I missing?
You know, that's the million-dollar question. That
Yeah.
has art historians just going crazy, right?
Yeah.
Because we know Rembrandt did depict Tobit in other works.
Okay.
There's a 1630 version that's very clear.
Right.
You see the key figures, you see that iconography, you see the whole deal.
Okay. But this one is like a visual puzzle. Like, there's no spinning wheel for Anna. There's no obvious Tobias. So, what are we supposed to make of that?
Well, and that's the thing, right? Some scholars believe that even without, those super obvious visual cues, it could be a very specific scene. The scene of Tobit and Anna waiting for Tobias to return.
Interesting.
Which, if you think about it, right, this moment of quiet anticipation really matches the painting's overall mood.
Right, like Rembrandt's giving us this very intimate emotional moment,
Exactly.
even without, you know,
It's exact.
hitting us over the head with the whole biblical context.
Precisely. It's about the mood, it's about suggestion, which is so fascinating when you consider how much emphasis Rembrandt put on light and shadow in his work.
Oh, totally. Yeah, no,
Speaking of which, remember we were talking about the signature, the date,
1632.
and how that plays into like whether this is even really a Rembrandt.
Exactly.
Right? That whole Rembrandt research project thing had me on the edge of my seat. Like, who are these people?
So they're like the authority on Rembrandt.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
They go through this incredibly meticulous process of authenticating his work. They're looking at brush strokes. They're looking at the paint itself.
Wow.
And get this, for a while there, they actually questioned whether philosopher in meditation was the real deal.
Wait, seriously, it's that good that, like, it could be faked?
What's a little more complicated than that? Uh-huh. Basically, they initially cited some stylistic inconsistencies.
Okay.
They had trouble placing it within, you know, Rembrandt's other known works,
right,
in 1632.
And they even suggested, get this, that it might be a studio work,
right?
Like painted by one of his pupils.
Wow. So for a while there, even the experts weren't sure if this was a real deal Rembrandt. Like, what tipped them off? Was it like a hidden signature or something?
And not quite a national treasure moment, but yeah, kind of. So in a later volume of their corpus of Rembrandt paintings, the RRP, they actually reversed course.
What?
Yeah, they reclassified it as a reattribution.
Okay, so back in the Rembrandt Club.
Back in.
Mystery solved.
Right. At least on the authorship front.
Right. Okay. But we still have this like incredibly powerful image that's like open to interpretation.
Oh, totally.
So beyond Tobit and Anna, like, what other ideas are out there? What are people saying about this thing?
Well, this is where things get really exciting, right? Because even without, like, a definitive answer on the subject matter, this painting has just sparked these incredibly thought-provoking interpretations.
Okay, hit me with your best shot.
Right.
Like, the more symbolism, the better.
Okay, so, for example, you've got Rudolf Steiner.
Okay.
The founder of Anthroposophy.
Right.
Which is a whole philosophy that emphasizes spiritual discovery, inner development.
Okay.
He saw this painting as a representation of light and dark.
Okay.
Right. And he was arguing that the way those two elements interact is what gives the work its power.
See, and you can't deny, like, that contrast is striking.
Yeah.
The way the light falls on the old man.
Exactly.
It's like a spotlight, you know, it feels very symbolic.
Totally. And Aldous Huxley.
Okay.
Right. Who, of course, you know, from Brave New World.
Amazing writer. Yeah.
He took it even further.
Okay.
He described this painting as a representation of the human mind itself.
Whoa.
Yeah. He talked about its teeming darknesses, its moments of intellectual and visionary illuminations, its mysterious staircases.
Okay, now that sends chills down my spine. We've gone from biblical figures to the vastness of the human mind.
Right.
Like, what else are we missing here?
Well, and some scholars even connect the painting to Rembrandt's personal life.
Okay.
Like, specifically his relationship with his own father.
Oh, interesting.
Because there's this drawing at the Ashmolean Museum that shows Rembrandt's father in this pose, and it's strikingly similar to the old man in Philosopher in Contemplation.
Really?
Yeah. So it's led to all the speculation that maybe this is a much more personal, psychological portrait.
Wow, so this one painting could be a tribute to his dad, a meditation on light and shadow, a metaphor for the human mind. It's no wonder it's so captivating.
Right, it really is. Like, it reflects back whatever the viewer brings to it.
Totally.
And, I mean, isn't that the beauty of art? It just sparks our imaginations, it makes us think critically, and it lets us form our own interpretations.
So, to you, dear listener, I ask,
what
do you see in Philosopher in Contemplation? Does the official interpretation even matter, especially given, you know, how much debate there is?
That's the question, isn't it? I mean, this painting, no matter what we call it, no matter its actual meaning, it invites us to reflect on our relationship with vision, with light, with this interplay between the inner and outer worlds.
It's like this powerful reminder that sometimes the most, like, profound journeys are the ones that we take within ourselves.
I love that. That's a great place to end it.
And hey, maybe next time you see a spiral staircase, you'll think of Rembrandt and all the mysteries still swirling around this incredible, captivating masterpiece.